Through a Scottish Prism, the programme that is unapologetically pro-Scottish independence and anti-Westminster rule. Everything we say here is viewed through a Scottish prism. Brought to you by Barhead Boy.
And welcome back, folks, to Through a Scottish Prism. Nice to have you back after a week. I hope you and yours have all been well and safe. And of course, you know what that means. We're now a week closer, hopefully, to a vaccine for the dreaded COVID and maybe a cure, who knows. But until they do, remember, follow the instructions, keep safe and keep well. And I'm also sorry we're a wee bit late going out today, but I had some technical difficulties, which I have now sorted. But it's going to be more than made up by my guest this week, who is a member of our SNPNEC, is in English, who told me she was a Cockney, but she had the good sense to marry a Scot, of course, over 60 years ago, worked for the Greater London Council, was a programmer project manager for their building sites programmes to produce 22,000 dwelling homes. She came to Scotland in 1979. She voted against the Assembly, as it was, as she put it herself, a bit of a dog's breakfast, which I cannot disagree with. I remember that campaign well, and I'll maybe have a wee chat about that. But she was the founder member of the New Scots for Independence, which is magnificent. And from that, in my humble opinion, all the other things that came along, English Scots for Independence, Women's for Independence, Poles for Independence, and the new one I started recently, Gin Drinkers for Independence. So it's with thanks to my guest today. Has been a member of the Scottish Land Commission, a vice convener, and wrote reports for them. And in 1999, tried to become a candidate for the Scottish Parliament, but didn't succeed in becoming a candidate. It's mainly now a local activist, is well known throughout the party. Has been in the, now was in the National Council for 4 years, and as I say, now a member of the NEC. And it is my pleasure to welcome Dot Jessamine to the show. Dot, thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, it's fun. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, I hope you say the same when we're finished. And I do apologise for all the delays with my technical problems, but we get there in the end. Excuse me, I've got a frog in my throat. So how are you today? What's new in your life at the moment?
I suppose nothing very much, except that I've spent the whole of the summer getting my outside of my garden. I've got an enormous garden which I've been putting into place so that I can manage it as I get older and older. And I've been sort of working extremely hard on that, and at the same time juggling with the work I've been doing for the party.
Mm. So, well, you came to Scotland in the 1970s, yeah? When did you decide that the independence was the thing for your new country?
It took 15 years. My husband came back. He came back with the oil. He was one of the lucky ones that came home with the oil, with a job. And because his people were Highland, and unfortunately in the Highlands, very often the way to get a job was to go somewhere else. And he came back, and I've lost myself.
When you joined the party?
Yeah. It was when I could see things were wrong, and I could see that it was putting an enormous pressure on our area in Aberdeenshire. It was upsetting things like house prices and causing real problems for some of the rather poorly paid farm people, this sort of thing. So I could see it was causing problems, but I wasn't convinced that it needed independence to sort it. And indeed, I suppose it didn't, if the British government had ever shown the slightest sign of any real concern for Scottish difficulties. Any decent government would have taken one look at the 1979 result and said, hoy, we better have a look at this. But anyway, the fact of the matter is that Mrs. Thatcher, she brought in an education bill for England. And then there was a similar bill for Scotland, and not a single one of our own MPs would actually sit on any of the parliamentary committees. And she stack them out with home counties lobby fodder. And I thought to myself, that's not going to work. You can't run a partnership of any kind like that. And I had had contact with Alan McCartney. I had been to Alec's office as a constituent and been very impressed. And Alan had said to me, why don't you join us? And I said to him, I'm English. And he said, what's that got to do with it? And when all this business with Mrs. Thatcher blew up and I thought, that's not fair, I thought, right, I'll join. And I did.
Mm. And so you had the great man as your MP, you lucky woman, one of my heroes. And of course, at that time, the Highlands was represented by the great woman herself, Winnie Ewing, Madame de Cos.
Ah, yes. Dear she, Winnie.
She's still my absolute hero, my numero uno. I wish she was still fighting for it.
Yeah, she was so good and she was so kind. I remember her on one occasion. It was the night we had the torchlight procession celebrating bringing back the stone. And I was speaking because as a convener of New Scots, and we were all in the sort of restroom behind waiting to go on. And I was so petrified. I'd never done anything like this. The place, the grammar school in Edinburgh was absolutely packed out. And then I found myself, I found I was going to be sitting next to, I can't remember her name, Kay, something
Kay Ulrich. Kay Ulrich.
Yeah, being involved. No, the one who bringing back the stone.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was shaking. And Winnie was just so nice. All Alec would do was laugh and say he'd never seen me in a state like this. But Winnie was, she's just nice to me.
Yeah. And I just wish she was at her fighting weight and age and about just now. I don't think we would have half the difficulties in the party that we have now if Winnie was about to... She wouldn't be slow in sorting a few of them out. But hey, we can't, you know, hindsight and all that stuff. But anyway, so you were a local activist, and then in 1999 you decided, I quite fancy having a go at this.
Well, yes, because you're talking about the Scottish Parliament.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I would have liked to have, because... for two reasons, really. One was that it seemed to me it would have been a very good culmination of the work that New Scots had done to separate out the idea of racism and nationalism, that it would make a nice rounding off, after which I hoped that the English would just forget that they were New Scots and just descend gracefully into the general sort of society of Scotland and just be Scots. That was one thing. And the other thing was that because of my job, when I was in London, it involved working with all sorts of government departments. My job was to get things through on time and over budget. Anything that got in the way of moving things along fast was my job to try and sort out. And I had to work with all sorts of people, and I knew more than I ever wanted to know about why this country doesn't work. In addition to which, part of my jobs was to go over and listen to debates in the House of Commons. So I knew quite a lot about exactly how government works in this country. And I felt that a lot of people going in with a new, there was something I could usefully contribute.
Hmm. But sadly, it wasn't to be.
No, I got shafted.
I think that, that still goes on, and I think it's something we will be talking about shortly. There's a lot of that goes on. So anyway, you didn't stop you being an activist, and you kept going, and we were elected to the National Council, which I remember from. And there was National Assembly as well. I remember that one from the early days. For 4 years. But it was, you get a wee bit disgruntled about how slow it was moving forward towards Indy.
Yes, yes. I think it. I wasn't very happy. I think the point at which I started getting really worried was when the Brexit bill was going through, and they put in the clause, which has now come to fruition, is currently come to fruition, about taking back the Scottish powers. And with my knowledge of governance, I took one look at that and I thought, we've got no choice now. We've either got to fight or we'll lose what we've gained over the last 20 years. And if I've got a criticism of the party over that particular issue, it's that it was written there in black and white. It was as clear as anything. Furthermore, I mean, they actually did try to do something about it at the time and lost in the Supreme Court on the business of retrospective legislation coming in between their legislation and the royal assent, and Westminster nipped in and made it illegal. I mean, now once people start doing things like that, if you've got any sense, you realise they're serious. And from that point on, I felt that we should be seriously planning for independence. I don't get excited about all the things that people do. It's no use sort of sitting there wringing your hands. The point is that the minute that was there, you had absolute evidence that they were going to do it. And the answer is then that you start planning how you fight back, not sit there wringing your hands for 3 years and then go up the wall when it actually happens.
Yeah, but the tragedy is, even today, though, even today I had a discussion with someone on social media. Well, it's not happened yet. Let's just wait and see then. Nicola will bring out her secret plan. Just wait till it happens. And you think, yeah. Wow. This is a government who's breaking international treaties, who tried to illegally prorogue Parliament, who's driving a horse and carriages through the Good Friday Agreement, who's lied to the European Union, who's getting taken to court by the European Union, and someone thinks that somehow or other they will play fair by Scotland. I despair.
They won't play fair by anybody. I mean, the English establishment has honed these kinds of skills over years. I mean, I come from the working classes. You can't tell me about what they get up to. I mean, it's. I think I do not see how anyone can say, as was said to me in front of me by Nicola herself, that I raised at NEC the question of using exploring certain comments they'd made in their paper on Section 30, and she said that she felt that Johnson would feel morally obliged eventually to give us a Section 30, and it was the law. I think it's, well, I mean, there you are. She's a politician. She's not going to get everything right, but I think that's something that she's got wrong. He's not that kind of person.
No, I mean, it's absolute. I have been getting myself into trouble recently with a lot of people because I'm saying that I think she's a brilliant First Minister, but I think she lacks a strategic brain, unlike Alec. But she hasn't surrounded herself with people who are strategic, because if they had, they would surely know. I mean, where is the incentive? Why would the British government give up the cash cow and the oil fields of Scotland? Just because, well, yeah, I think we should, because there's 60% of them now went away, and yeah, off you go. What, you know, never mind. I mean, it's bizarre. I go back to what I just said before. You know, this is a government that will break international treaties and law, who ignores the United Nations over Chagos. It slaps away UN criticism of the way they're treating the disabled and the poor. And our leader of the independence movement, because that's what she is, not just the SNP, sort of says, yeah, well, it'll be untenable. Once we get another big, huge victory, they will just cave in. It's almost laughable, Dot.
Yeah, well, I think the thing is that it's more, I don't think it's even a question of them being sort of doing Scotland down. If you think about it, He is the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom. His job is to look after not Scotland alone, but the interests of the United Kingdom. It is his duty to resist anything which would affect adversely the position of Great Britain, of the United Kingdom, in the world. And the cession of Scotland would undoubtedly do that. So he's not going to change, and neither, more to the point, this is why I hate personalities, more to the point, neither would any of his successors from any of the other parties.
No, absolutely. So that brings me nicely on, because we have to find an alternative way. Section 30 is never going to... I mean, you can live to be 3,045. No British Prime Minister will ever grant a Section 30 ever again. And it doesn't matter how big the numbers are. And that's another thing that people are hiding behind just now. Well, just look at the numbers. Yeah, that's more to do with an incompetent British government and after December, the realisation that Brexit, there was now no escape. As well as, I've got to give credit to the First Minister, she's done a great job with COVID, although I think it's time for her to step back from that and hand it over to the professionals, because it's been politicised now by the British and the British propaganda, BBC, so step back from it, but that's another story. But we need an alternative, and that's where you've moved your sort of laser beam onto. You've now decided, yeah, we need an alternative, and that's what you've been working on.
Yes, because I felt